Hi, you guys. This is Richard Sachs. I'm your host on Lost Arts Radio. Thanks for joining us. And we've got an exciting guest today, and it's connected with my interest in education, which has, for the last, 65 years, been an intense interest of mine, and something that's affecting our whole life, and it never stops. And not just that you can take a class when you get older, but that you're getting educated every minute. You just may not be conscious of that fact, and we've got input streaming in all the time, and it affects everything in our life. So I had a couple of questions about things that are going on in the world related to that, and I thought the best person, if we could possibly get some more of his time, would be Dr. Duke Pesta, the academic director of Freedom Project Academy, and also an English professor at University of Wisconsin, author of a book called The Renaissance and the Postmodern Study in Comparative Critical Values, which I hope we'll get a chance to talk about today as well. The websites to look at, which I recommend, are fpeusa.org and freedomprojectacademy.com. So this is going to go by real fast, and welcome Dr. Pesta. I'm really grateful that you're with us for a few minutes today. Let's get into some interesting stuff.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so what brought this about in my mind and wanting you back right now is that I was noticing some statistics. And the vast majority, according to many sources, of people in the U.S. are doing, if they're working at all, they're doing jobs they hate. And, you know, one of them I read was around 90%. The others are pretty close. And I want to see what you think the relationship is to that between that outcome and what they pick up in education and where the system is taking them. And then once we look at those connections, I want to see if we can get some lessons about it from some of the things you wrote in your book. And then that's going to go to a couple of other places if we get time. So that's where we'll start.
So. Good. Well, yeah, I think that's right. I think that there are a lot of people, particularly millennials and younger, who have found out that they've spent a lot of time and money on a college education, and that unlike 20, 30 years ago, when a college degree guaranteed you employment and it guaranteed you a higher standard of living than a typical high school grad, that's not necessarily true anymore. So we've got a lot of young people who've invested a tremendous amount of money in education. They've been less than diligent in picking their majors. And so they end up with careers and jobs that have no relationship to what they majored in college. And most of those people are the ones, there's a new survey out that said, I just did a show on this, about millennials who are willing, the top six things they're willing to do to get rid of their student loan debt. That includes spending a week in prison. That the things that they're willing to do, they wish they could go back and undo that. And so I think that's exactly right. We do have a bit of a crisis here. We have a culture that keeps telling kids that unless they go to college, they're somehow failures. And then we've got a college system that exploits them and overcharges them and gets them into debt and fails to provide an education for them that they can then use for employment to pay back those loans. So it's kind of a vicious cycle.
Right. The other thing besides choosing the wrong major, which I think is absolutely true, and we know of a lot of PhDs working in fast food order windows, hiding the fact that they have a PhD so they won't be rejected for being overqualified. That's going on too. But what about the fact that they get into the field that they thought they would love, working for some incredibly toxic corporation that has good benefits as long as you give up your conscience? I think that's another frequent outcome from that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think part of the problem is that as a culture, this is a little bit broader than maybe education, but as a culture, we no longer center our kids. We used to have faith and family. We used to have patriotism. There used to be a world order. We used to have boundaries for kids. We used to instill manners and discipline. Teaching kids self-discipline was more important than giving them things. And that it tended to grow up kids that were more focused and more centered, that they, when they did take on college, they were more serious about it. They tended to major in more serious things. They could follow up. I just think we have a couple generations now of utterly unmoored kids. They have no boundaries and no filters. The whole world is at their fingertips with technology, yet they have absolutely no discernment in what's worth seeing and what's not. And so there's a lot of frivolity with this. And I think I said this on the program last time you had me. In America today, a college education is really what a high school education was 34 years ago. 1970, you would have graduated knowing more about history, more about culture, more about literature and art. In 1970, you would have graduated high school with a better overall education than you're getting now with your college degree. And it's just 4 more years of extended adolescence. It's 4 more years of putting off real life decisions that starts to harm them more.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's pretty generous saying that it's what a high school education used to be, because there's a lot of ways it's not up to that standard. And we talked last time about some of the tests that have been uncovered from the colonial period, from junior high and high school level, and most adults wouldn't even have a chance on that now. And as far as the training of the kids for what's worthwhile, I guess fortunately the elementary schools are stepping in now and teaching morality as well as...
it's not what you and I would call morality. You're right. What happened was is that the winning method of progressive nihilists, the winning method was 40, 50 years ago, they infiltrated the universities. They transformed universities into place of radical revolutionary left-wing ideology. So they were so successful at it that it's not even that radical anymore. I mean, you look... The entire DNA of a modern university revolves around secularism, atheism, radical politics, collectivism, and globalism. Those are the 5 things. And so you walk into any classroom, even classrooms that you would think are utterly apolitical, like in the hard sciences, and all of the base assumptions of the institution of higher learning is progressivism. And so I'd like to think I suppose I could grudgingly allow it if the elementary schools were teaching kids morality, but they're not. They're teaching them social justice posturing. They're teaching them certain kinds of ideological strategies. They're brainwashing these kids. And so what worked so well for about 40 years in the universities, you know, we sent our kids off to, gave our kids a pretty good education, sent them off to high school, sent them off to college, and then they came back 4 years later opposed to everything we stood for. They were angry, they graduated, they were revolutionary, they didn't believe in their country anymore, they didn't believe in freedom, liberty, personal responsibility. That worked so well that they caught on 20 years ago. Let's start taking that corrosive methodology and put it in the high schools and the middle schools and the elementary schools, so that by the time the kids graduate high school, they'll be fully indoctrinated already and they're ready to go to college and the professors won't have to do anything to really change any minds.
Yeah, true. They are learning from a very young age, I think, that they're oppressed, which is one of the basic tenets of Marx and Engels, I guess, that in the communist theology, but they're just a little confused about what they're oppressed by. I think they're trying to get overthrow the patriarchal oppression from sciences like biology and things like that that have been, you know, telling things that were. I don't want to get kicked off the air here, but you know, not exactly correct.
And well. You're right. They teach them victimology, right? That all these kids are victims, and they're victims of heterosexuality. They're victims of our history. They're victims of capitalism. They're victims of you name it. So everything that makes all the pillars of civilization, right? All the things that we would, whether we were conservative or liberal, all the things that we agreed collectively that were required for civilization to function, right? The ability to talk to each other, the First Amendment. Right? Strong borders. These used to be very liberal positions, actually. These things now have all been deemed sexist, racist, white supremacist, homophobic, bigoted, transphobic. And so we've taught our kids. It's funny that you bring this up. In my Shakespeare class, speaking of education, I'm teaching Shakespeare, a group of junior and senior Shakespeare students. And we're reading King
Wasn't
Lear.
Shakespeare a white male, if I remember?
He was. Very toxic. And believe me, I had to fight that fight too with these kids in terms of getting them to see beyond that. But we're reading King Lear, and I don't know if you've ever read it, but King Lear is it's a play that 400 years ago Shakespeare pointed out very directly. What happens if you kick the pillars of civilization out from under people? What if love of family members, brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers? What if religion and what if law and everything becomes corrupt? What if you get rid of all those things and King Lear, it happens, right? King Lear loses control of the kingdom. He goes from being a king to worse than a beggar. And one of the messages of King Lear is that when you mindlessly take away the pillars of civilization, you realize quickly that there's nothing to replace them. And so civilization becomes a jungle. And I think that's what's happening in our culture. We have taught kids to deconstruct, to bulldoze all the tenets of Western culture: faith, family, patriotism, freedom, free markets, the Constitution, the Founding Fathers. They've bulldozed them all, and they're bulldozing them in third grade now, second grade now. And the reality is that they have nothing to replace it with. And so what you're left with is a worse situation. It's kind of like the jungle, right? And I told my kids yesterday in class, all these ways of viewing books that we forced on you, feminism, Marxism, you know, environmentalism, all these lenses we've imposed on you to erase books and to rewrite them in political ways, all of those things are themselves radical left-wing activist positions. And so they don't give you much to replace what was removed. And so that's how come you get groups like Antifa, right? The bunch of college kids who are fighting fascist by being fascist, right? Who are protecting free speech by shutting down free speech, disavowing violence in violent ways. And they're not even educated enough to recognize the hypocrisy of what they're doing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Doug, I know you can beep out the fact that Duke mentioned, Dr. Pesta mentioned father and mother. I don't know if that's legal anymore. but I agree. In fact, one of the pillars, you mentioned five pillars of, I think, the current education system you were talking about. One of them is certainly, in addition to those, would be censorship, you know, to protect people from bad ideas, right? Like, you know, being against free speech. You have to make sure that nobody hears anything that would intrude on that. And, with nothing to replace the beliefs that have been bulldozed, I think what replaces them is what you're against, which is pretty much everything normal that used to be.
I think that's right. They've mainstreamed, you know, the things they say they don't like: repression, intolerance, censorship, silencing of other voices. That's exactly what they're doing. And it is alarming to me. It would be one thing if they were doing it fully aware of this. That would make them fascist, by the way. If they were doing this, if they were defending free speech by stifling yours, and they honestly knew what they were doing, then we could call them what they are, as fascists. But these are kids who are behaving like fascists, who haven't the vaguest idea. They call everyone else Nazis. They don't know the first thing about Nazism. When I ask them, you know, it's stunning when we talk about when the Nazi regime comes up. These kids believe that Nazis were Christian conservative right-wingers. When you try to point out to them that the word socialism is part of what the word Nazi means, they're dumbfounded.
No, you must be a Nazi to say that, even.
Exactly, you bingo. Everybody who's they don't like, everything they don't like is fascist and Nazi. When you point out that Nazis were closer to their worldview than anybody else's, then you're a Nazi for saying that too.
That's right. And in fact, what that brings up is that this is not just an intellectual programming. This is an emotional programming, and I think they've been kind of inoculated against these new views being challenged by getting very angry and defensive and wanting to attack instead of considering what you're saying.
Well, they've actually, you're right, it is an indoctrination that is, in fact, it's more emotional than it is intellectual. I find that there's very little intellectualism about this, and this is something that maybe your audience needs to be aware of. Our kids are not getting an education. They're not really getting critical thinking. They're not being able to distinguish between good ideas and bad. They're not able to apply history to modern day life and understand how we got here. So in some sense, what they're getting is a very anti-intellectual education. What they're getting is a lot of emotional manipulation. Emotionalism, outrage, anger, these things now have been deemed virtuous. And you don't even necessarily have to know why you're angry, as long as you're angry at the right things. And anger and intolerance and this kind of bigotry, it's now being taught to them on a very emotive level that it's appealing to some kids. Because studying history and foreign languages and studying, you know, complicated philosophical issues from the past and trying to see things from multiple perspectives, that's difficult. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of hard time. But simply getting angry at the right things is easy. They're 18 years old, for God's sake. They've got a lot of hormones and they've got a lot of rage. And all the left has done is keep ideas out of their head and make them very angry. And it seems to be working for the revolutionary paradigm for them.
Yeah, unfortunately, very successful. And it almost, the way you're describing it, it's being taught like a new religion. In other words, believe it or you're bad. It's not,
It is very orthodox.
It's not reasoning that leads to these conclusions. It's indoctrination.
You're exactly right. And I, speaking of the books, I just happen to be teaching this semester to a group of freshmen, first semester freshmen. I'm teaching The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. And if you're not familiar with it, it's really an interesting book. It's a senior devil by the name of Screwtape who's lecturing his younger nephew, Wormwood, about the best way to steal a human soul. And education factors huge in the entire document. The devil is constantly lecturing his little ward about how you can manipulate education. And one of the things that I was teaching to the kids just the other day, Screwtape says, most human beings think that we devils spend our time trying to put ideas in people's head. That's exactly wrong, the devil says. We spend our time trying to keep ideas out of people's heads. Right? Don't let them think. Don't let them reflect on their behavior. Don't let them ask if what they're doing is actually the right thing to do. And that struck me, and I pointed it out to the freshmen, and I said to them, look, to what degree is your education so far through high school and your first year at college, to what degree has your education been more about keeping ideas out of your head than putting them in? And about 80% of the kids in the class raised their hand and they agreed with that. They felt that they were not being given ideas that they could think about, that they were being told how to behave.
Yeah, it's emotional education, defending against the ideas so they can't come in. And, you know, I can see the relevance of these books you're talking about, but what about the one that you wrote? What's the connection there?
Well, that's an academic book, and one of the tragedies of being an academic is that you write books to stay alive. You have to write publish or perish, right?
Right,
And you write books that nobody ever reads. So a couple of years ago, I wrote with a colleague of mine, one of the other few conservative professors I know. We were grad students together, and we wrote a book called The Renaissance and the Postmodern, because we're both professors of Renaissance literature, Shakespeare and Milton and the great 16th century poets. And so we wrote a book in which we simply pointed out that if you allow the writers of the 16th century, if you allow them to speak without obfuscating their writings with all of these radical leftist lenses, you will find out that those writers had more to say to us than the postmodern ones do, right?
And what do you mean by postmodern? Because some people don't understand postmodern because it sounds like a contradiction. Modern being the most recent, and after that being something that hasn't happened yet. So what does the term mean?
Yeah, postmodernism is basically the period of intellectual and philosophical state of the union, so to speak, of the last 40, 50 years. Postmodernism is, it calls itself postmodernism. It's because we have moved beyond even the traditional values of modern life. And so postmodernism is very much solipsistic, it's narcissistic, it's the idea that human beings really can't commune to each other, that we're all isolated on islands. It's the idea that there is no such thing as truth, that everything is always political, that truth and beauty are just social constructs. And that's where you get out of this philosophical worldview. And people like Derrida and Foucault, these various French theorists of the 60s and 70s who came up with many of these ideas, they've become enshrined now. And then you go back one or two generations before it. The origins of postmodernism really are socialist dialectic. All the different ways that postmoderns see the world through Marxist lenses, feminist lenses, environmental lenses, queer lenses, all of those are rooted in Hegelian dialectic, which was passed on to Karl Marx. Marx and Nietzsche then pushed it forward, and we get to the 21st century where this kind of belief in moral relativity and the idea that history is all propaganda, the idea that politics is everything, power is everything. That's where we are in a postmodern world. And so it's very inhumane. It's very, again, it's very Marxist. When you think about it, it denies beauty. It denies truth. And it's kind of intellectual anarchy, if you will. Very good at tearing things down, but not able to build anything. And so when you think about how our kids are being taught to read in college, when they open books, and this is kind of a long answer, but when kids are given books in college, they're not allowed really to read the book in the sense that there was an author who wrote it and that the period in which it was written helps you understand what the book means. No. When we give kids books, we tell them, all right, you're going to look at this book, but you're going to look at it either from a feminist perspective who's being persecuted, how are men, the opening assumption is, before you even open the book, that men persecute women. So your job as a reader is not to understand Adam Smith or not to understand Paradise Lost. It's to find examples of male oppression of women in that book. Or if you're going to give them a Marxist reading, okay, we're going to give you the great poem Paradise Lost, but your job is not to study it as Milton wrote it. Your job is to find class distinctions, right? Where in Milton's world do you see the rich and the powerful lording it over the poor, right? And so even when we give kids good books, they're not reading the books. They're reading the books through these very left-wing activist models, these lenses.
So if that's done efficiently, you could get the same message out of every book, basically.
Exactly. I call it the cookie cutter reading, right? Because it doesn't matter what the book says. All you pull out of the book is what you already knew you were going to find to begin with. And so it's narcissistic is what it is, and it's ultimately solipsistic, because it's not about learning from books or expanding your worldview in books. It's about forcing books to be everything that's not your worldview already gets cut away and discarded.
This seems like it would be perfect training to get into the media so that you already know how to spin anything into the same message.
Yeah, I think that's right. It is. This is a broad philosophy. That's why they call it postmodernism, right? It doesn't just apply to schooling, although that's where you primarily see it. But our intellectual classes, whether they're politicians or lawyers, whether they're journalists or our Hollywood elites, they're all operating under these worldviews. I give you one example, Hollywood. So in Hollywood, you don't actually have to be environmentally conscious. If you're Al Gore or you're Leo DiCaprio, you don't really have to live an environmentally friendly life. You get to, I think about when Leo DiCaprio won his Oscar, his honorary Academy Award a few years ago, and he won it not for anything he'd done in terms of acting. He won it for his environmental activism. Now, you think about that for a second. Hollywood gives him one of the most coveted awards because he's an environmentalist activist. Now, he left the arena then after he won his award, got into a limousine, drove to a private plane, flew to the south of France where he had his private yacht resting and had a big party. See, right. That's postmodernism, right? You don't have to actually change your life. If you ascribe to the right politics, if you are politically correct, if you align yourself with the correct ideology, you can lecture everybody else on their lifestyle and keep for yourself your own private and highly privileged lifestyle.
Right, because there's only a few, you know, superior people that are doing that anyway, not enough to ruin the world. But it seems like that's connected to the phenomenon that we see all over the place of technology, which theoretically could be used, if it were designed this way, to benefit humanity, turning out to be globally suicidal. And there are technologies all over the place that are not only destroying real environmental concerns, but people in the process. Even the medical industry being an example of that. So is it the same mentality that gets into technologies and makes them self-destructive instead of seeing what they could really do?
Yeah, I think it is. And another way to look at it is think about all the billionaires who have made their fortunes because of our freedoms, our liberties, and our free markets. How many self-made billionaires are there who now are working really hard to make sure that there's no more billionaires, right? You've got Bill Gates, you've got Warren Buffett, a whole list of these guys who did it themselves. They are a testament to the American dream. Bill Gates is a guy who dropped out of college, for God's sake, right? He didn't need it. It wasn't helping him. Made billions of dollars. And now that they've made this level of money and they have this level of comfort and privilege, they're doing everything they can to make sure nobody else ever has that opportunity. The tech companies, like you said, are engaging in this kind of radical politics now too. And you said something right, that's correct, right? In all, and you think, look at history. This is why we don't, if we educated kids, we could fight back against this. You look at simple history, and the history of almost all socialist nations, all of them, has been that everybody suffers a much lower level standard of living in the name of equality. While the elites, whether there's 1 or 100 or 1,000 of them, the elites continue to live with the highest form of privilege. You know, the average Cuban lives what? They live on about what, $30 American a month, while the Castro brothers have multiple billions in Swiss bank accounts. And so this is the way it goes. And you would think that people would see through this because, you know, the very same people who are urging you to the battlements are the ones who are lounging in their luxury still. So it's you're going to war for people who are absolutely doing the opposite of what they're telling you you're going to war for.
Right. Well, I mean, they did achieve world peace to be, I mean, not world peace, but equality in their country. Everybody equally poor. I mean, they at least had that accomplishment.
Yeah. Was it Margaret Thatcher? Somebody said, socialism is shared misery.
Yeah, exactly. But at least it's equal, except for the people running it. But they can't be equal because they have to be in charge. So it seems to me that looking at that, right now, the technology available is not going to be a repeat of past patterns in the sense that they've got the ability to create real world peace by exterminating life completely.
You got it. The best way to love human beings is to kill them, right? I mean, that's the best we can do for them is end their... It's very demonic. It's the idea that life, because there is suffering in life, because life is not... You can't get through this world without pain, that the best thing we can do for anybody, for all of us, is just to stop us from being born. If you can't stop us from being born, then most certainly be willing to usher us out as quickly and cleanly as possible.
Yeah, if you can do it at the beginning, it saves so much suffering.
And
I remember a bumper sticker in the 60s that was kind of ahead of its time for the mentality now, and it said, save the earth, kill yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not ironic anymore.
I mean,
I was reading in the newspaper just the other day that there are these fatalist societies are growing where you make a pledge not to bring any kids into the world and you make a pledge to exit this world before your utility has gone, right? Don't be a burden. The minute you can no longer actively produce for society, right, you make a vow to leave it. And those things are growing. People are signing on for that kind of stuff.
New definition of sainthood, I guess. But so since our time is running really fast, let's look for a minute at if you were in charge of what happens, you know, in at least in our country, and you want solutions and to make things better, what are some of the things that you would do to alleviate these issues?
You know, it's we've got to go back to the idea that there is such, and this is going to sound so bizarre, but we've got to go back to the idea that there is indeed truth, that there is indeed such a thing as better and worse, righter and wronger, truer and falser, and that once we accept the idea that there is true and false, there is good and evil, there are better choices and there are worse choices, once we go back to that, then you start from that premise, then education becomes about choosing, right? How do we determine better from worse? How do we, and that's where history comes in. Look at what's happened before. That's where critical thinking comes in, right? And so, but to do that, and this is the thing that always gets me, I've really come to see over the last 10, 12 years that how important the idea of God is, right? Without necessarily denominationaling him, the idea of God, the idea that there is a transcendent good, that we can then begin to work back off.
That gives you purpose in life after that.
It does. It does. And once we completely got rid of God, and one of the things that postmodernism boasts about is that it is a godless philosophy, right? That there is no to belief in God is childish and juvenile, cowardly. And so human beings are nothing more than highly evolved animals. And therefore, if we're animals, our morality should be the morality of animals, right? Why should we deny ourselves anything? Why should we limit ourselves in any way? Why should we argue that human reason obligates us to behave in a better level than the animals?
You could do is move from the cattle to the farmer. And then the mentality of the farmer is to do whatever it wants with herding the animals.
It's not even the mentality of the animal to the farmer. It's the idea of the wolf or the sheep, right? All we are is animals, and look, there are no shepherds in the world, right? We took dogs and bred them over a million years. What were dogs before human beings bred them to be sensitive to us? They were wolves, right?
Right.
So in the animal kingdom, you don't even have farmers. If we're just animals, in the animal kingdom, you have wolves and sheep. There is
so you aspire to become a wolf then, right? That would be the best thing.
It's all, just yesterday I asked my kids that question. I said, if postmodernism is correct at the university, I said, that means they're wolves of sheep. And they saw that clearly. I said, okay, yeah. So how many of you would want to be a sheep? Raise your hand. And nobody did. And so I called him out. I said, you're all social justice warriors, aren't you? I keep hearing from you how you care about the poor and the oppressed, how you care about inequity. You just admitted that you would rather be a wolf than a sheep. Why would you side with the wolves? Because instinctively, when you ask them that question, they can't answer you. They just know that if it's wolf and a sheep, wolves eat and sheep are eaten.
Right.
But so I asked,
eating feels better than being eaten, right?
Yes. And when you ask them to square that with their social justice posturing, they're at a loss to do it. They can't.
Yeah, because they think they're fighting for the sheep.
That's right. When in reality, they're fighting for wolves.
So are all the sheep trying to be wolves underneath everything, do you think? Or are some of them just trained that you're a sheep and that's how it is? And you just, I mean, what is a sheep supposed to do if it's not aspiring to be a wolf?
You know, the great Russian novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote about this exactly in those terms. And the hero of that book, Raskolnikov, he commits a murder simply to see if he can do it. He commits a murder because he doesn't believe in God, and he doesn't believe in morality, and he doesn't believe in boundaries. He thinks these are all just made up things. So he wants to prove it. And so he kills an old woman for no other reason than to prove his point. And he's having a conversation later in the book with a police lieutenant who's begun to figure out that he's the murderer, and they're talking about sheep and wolves, just like we are.
Okay.
And Raskolnikov, the murderer, goes on and on and on about how wolves have a moral obligation to eat sheep, and sheep have a moral obligation to be eaten, right? Okay. And so the question that you just broached came up. And finally, after all of this left-wing posturing, the police lieutenant said to him, that's all well and good, but who in Russia today, what sheep doesn't believe he's actually a wolf, right? That you, what you're doing, he said to the murderer, is by your logic, everybody could kill everybody else simply because they have to prove that they're not sheep. And the murderer had no answer for that. But you're exactly right, that what we've done is we've made these kids think that they're 100% behind the poor, suffering sheep. But the arguments for how we help them, abortion, euthanasia, Antifa war, shutting them down, everything we're doing to the sheep is designed to destroy them, not encourage them to live peacefully.
Right, right, right. Okay. So there seems like there are certain levels and types of new morality being taught. One is to the sheep, that's your job to be eaten. And there are levels going up the chain of power to the people that are designing these programs to keep the sheep hypnotized to think they're sheep so they can be eaten. And what they're being taught is that since there is no real truth and there's no real basis for any morality, the only morality left is, can you end up being the chief wolf or as close to it as possible?
Well, and you think about that and what happened in place. Look at places like North Korea, right? Where this is carried, like you said earlier, to a religious extreme, this kind of behavior. Everybody reveres Kim Jong-un as this god because they're terrified not to. Meanwhile, the country's starving to death, right? But his little circle has the best of everything. They live like Saudi billionaires, but the rest of the country's starving to death. Yet those poor downtrodden sheep keep worshiping the wolf who eats them. And what that's the situation we have in America in its most extreme form. That's where the progressive sociological movers and shakers would love to drive us to, right? Far few people alive. Right. Let's have a massive culling of the sheep. Let's take the human population from 7 billion down to maybe 400-500 million. Right. And then you have
George Einstein's level.
Yes. And then you have the overseers. Right. Then you have the benighted leaders. Right. Jonathan Swift in Gulliver's Travel makes fun of this idea. Right. You have the Houyhnhnms who are in charge of the yokels. Right. And it's exactly that. The yokels are all of us poor, benighted slobs who don't know how to feed ourselves. The Houyhnhnms are the enlightened class. Go back to Plato's Republic. This is the philosopher king, right, who oversees the sheep and lies to them benevolently if it's in their best interest for him to do so. We've seen the idea 1,000 times over 1,000 years. It's right. Just the newest form now is in this kind of benevolent so-called social justice posturing.
So what's the morality and the motive of the people who consciously are controlling the sheep, such as the top people in the media, conventional media right now, that are know that they're trying to give false information and keep the sheep from finding out what's happening? Is it because they think that, like what you just described with the culling, that they're going to be among the remnant that's left and be able to enjoy things?
I think it's what we said earlier. It's because when you have kicked out the pillars of civilization and we've removed them, then it mm-hmm. becomes a jungle. It's about power, right? And so media has power. Tech has power, right? And they get together, these tech, these powerful elites, to reinforce each other's power, right? It's why journalism and entertainment and technology are all working together on this, right? They're the benevolent woke one. And that word itself shows you, right? Woke. Look at the word woke. If you're woke, that means you are aware, you have a conscience, you're socially just. That's all you have to be is woke. But that implies by definition that the rest of us who don't see it their way are asleep, right? And you see the difference. If we're sleeping and they're awake, then they can do whatever they want to us and we'll not even know they've done it, right?
Yeah, so they need to keep us asleep at all costs.
Yes, and their wokeness is not about moral virtue. It's about power, right? The awake will run everything. The sleeping will be excluded from it all, right?
They can be the wolves.
Exactly.
Now, higher up the chain, you know, you get through the banking systems, and this is obviously a very abbreviated version because we're almost out of time, but you go up to the central banks that are overseeing each country, and then above those levels, we've heard from people who have escaped from the system at higher levels that it's not about money. It's more a satanic approach, and the people are doing things that at the top appear to be headed toward not a culling as an endpoint, but a sacrifice of everything, including themselves. And they don't want their minions to know that, because you can't motivate them unless they think they're going to be left. If nobody's going to be left, which it really looks like the plan is to do that, then they wouldn't be able to motivate the people that work for them. But at the top levels, they're doing things that are not the revocable kind of damage to humanity and to the earth and to life forms all over the place. It's clear that they don't intend to bring it back. So how does that fit into the whole wolf paradigm?
Well, I don't think wolves, when they're eating up the sheep, stop and think about whether there'll be enough sheep to eat 5, 10, or 20 years from now. Right. Their power is sated now. And so I don't think they think about those things. They don't need to. The alpha doesn't need to think about population density, right? And so that's part of it. I just want to sort of get an answer to what you said. Step back to what we said before about what the answer is to this.
Yes.
Take the idea of Christianity as just one religion. And that I think we can all agree that Christianity is the religion that has had the greatest impact on Western culture over the last 2,000 years. I think that's a safe statement. Mm-hmm. Now look at the idea of Christianity. The God of Christianity entered the world to save it. He did not enter as a king. He who made the universe, he who sat on a throne, he who had the power, he gave it up. He entered the world as a slave. He entered the world as a poverty-stricken child, right? That power that the Alpha, who created the universe, entered as the Beta, right? And what he did was he suffered for the sheep. He even uses that metaphor. I am the good shepherd, he says, right? I will lay down my life for the sheep. And why the idea of God is so important, and in particular, I would argue, the Christian God, because the Christian God is primarily a God of sacrifice, who sacrificed himself for those of us who were genuine sheep compared to him. And that model is the model on which Western culture has evolved. It gave us the Magna Carta. That's the model that gave us the founding of this country. That's the ethos, right? That the more we've progressed over the last 2,000 years, and certainly over the last 300, the idea that power should serve others, not that power should serve itself. And the more we get away from the Christian foundations of the nation, the more we go back to the old system where power serves itself. And the powerless are they have no moral recourse, let alone physical one. Their job is to be eaten.
So is a summary of that in your, you know, your opinion to say that a solution to all of this, if there is one, is for individuals to become, to wake up and become more conscious of what they could really be, and then to become that. And if that's true, is there a chance for individuals just to feel better about the mess that's happening, or to really change the whole thing?
Well, I think you hit on something important. If you want to boil this entire 45-minute conversation down to one word for each side, they're for collectivism, we are for individualism, right?
Okay.
And everything they push for is collectivity, right? That you lose your individuality, you lose your individual worth in the name of these big...
for the greater good.
Yeah, exactly. Now, again, go back to the individual. I think you're right. The answer is we've got to find a way to turn the focus of civilization back to individuals and away from collectives. And again, I will point out that the single biggest voice for the individual in the history of the world has been Jesus. I mean, whether you believe who he is, he's the Son of God or not, look at the Gospels. He is a champion for the individual. He doesn't heal people collectively. He treats people as individuals. He walks among them. The forgotten, the downtrodden, the sick, the dying, the leprous, he puts his hands on them. He puts his fingers in their ears to make them hear, and he spits on the dirt and makes mud and wipes it on their eyes to give them their eyesight back. His entire mission is for the individual. His salvation is for every individual, not for us as a collective. And I think that whether you believe in who he says he is or not, his idea of promoting the individual at the expense of everything else is the only hope for civilization. It's always been the only hope for civilization.
So does that mean each individual should have it as their aspiration to change themselves rather than worrying about whether the rest of the world changes or not?
Well,
and if it's just them, how much does that improve the situation?
Well, if you think about the ethos of Christianity and what Christ said, true enlightenment is suffering for other people. What is the greatest love of all? It is the willingness to lay down your life for another, right? So for Christ, the working out of this individuality is to make the individual, not because the government puts a gun to your head and says you will care about your comrade or else the party will destroy you. It's right. You as an individual recognizing the truth. You have to volunteer with your free will to take what's powerful about you or what's talented about you and to use it in service to others, not to yourself. Right? And notice how even the decision is based on the individual. There's no proletariat party. There's no central communist organization whose job it is to force you to be benevolent, right? It must be an individual choice, and it must be an individual choice to choose to serve, and to choose in particular to be servants to the sheep, right? Why does Christ wash the feet of his disciples? And why does he tell them to do the same thing? Because to whom much is given, much will be expected. The more power and wealth you have, the more obligated you are as an individual to serve others with it. And we've never been able to do it perfectly. If we'd been able to do it perfectly, I suppose we'd all be living in the New Jerusalem now. But the point is that it's for Christianity anyway, it's not succeeding, it's trying, right? And I would go back and argue that America was the first country that was founded specifically on that kind of an ideal, where government, the collective government, works for us. We don't work for it, right? That government is there not to engrandeer its own power, but to serve the people. We've gotten away really far away from that now. In fact, that may be the single biggest thing that progressive secularists want to get rid of the United States over, right? Individual liberty, individual rights. That's what the main firing line is right now in this war, and they're winning it.
Right, exactly. So I guess as a bottom line, whatever the rest of the world does, if you transform your own life, becoming aware of those values and the ideals that you could demonstrate by how you live, do that instead of trying to attack and destroy the bad guys, right? Which is what all the Antifa type people are told to do in the name of freedom and world peace and everything like that.
That sounds about right. And the sad thing is how far along this is. We're losing a war, that our side doesn't even know we're fighting yet. Wow. And we have not woken up to the realization of what's happening here. You could even make the argument that this impeachment of Donald Trump, whatever you think of Trump, the fact is that we, the American people, have not seen a single shred of evidence for any of this, that this is being done behind closed doors, that due process is being denied, the Constitution is being overruled so that these Democrat committees can do this in secrecy and silence.
And blatant lies, too.
Blatant lies. And the media is not being a watchdog for this. And the who is there that's actually pointing out that the system here is what's wrong, that this entire process is a violation of everything we stand for as a country? And then so those of us, you know, anybody out there supporting Trump, they'll still vote for him. But at the highest levels of our culture, no one seems the least bit bothered that the entire system of justice has been undermined by a bogus process.
Yeah. And probably whoever owns the voting machines can elect whoever they want.
Increasingly so. And it's not, you know, I'm not even sure you need voting machines anymore. You've brought enough illegal immigrants into this country and allowed them to blend into the population that it doesn't matter even more. If you let them vote, like California is already trying to do, the minute you let them vote, and how can you stop them? I mean, at some point, if they know we're not going to remove them, we're not going to stop them from coming, we're not going to deport them, then at some point, if you're going to let them stay here as a country, and we've decided we're going to let them stay, then you can't stop them from voting, right?
Right.
And so once they vote, 90% of them are going to vote not for individualism and liberty and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. That's hard work. They're going to vote for what? They're going to vote for this big progressive enclave who's welcomed them, who's told them that you're natively superior to actual Americans, right? That this was your land before we stole it.
And
that, you know, you should be paid at the expense of actual Americans. Is that not the platform that every
Economic solution is just give everybody as much money as they want.
Well, and isn't that the platform of every Democrat presidential candidate, all 27 of them, right?
I think so.
Open borders, right? Free everything. And who's going to pay for it? The wealthy, and that's not just billionaires, that's the American middle class. You're going to pay for this too. Everyone's going to pay for it.
Well, yeah, actually only the evil, you know, trillionaires and things will pay for it, and they won't mind at all because they'll still have money. But what they're saying is that the myth of having to pay for anything is part of the oppression, because really all you have to do is print the money.
Well, that will run. You know and I know from history that that's a limited solution. And when that solution fails, the chaos has come again.
And they'd say, well, no problem. Just make it $1,000 minimum wage. Everybody will still be fine. It's a little lack of understanding of economics.
If we understood economics and history, we wouldn't be in this mess. But again, what are the two things that our school systems refuse to teach our kids? Accurate history and economic reality.
Yeah, exactly. I just ran out of time, I guess. How does the transformation of one's own life affect the world situation? Or does it? Is that a myth or is that true?
No, I think it is.
Does it even matter?
I think it is true. I think it is true that these battles are won metaphysically one person at a time, one choice at a time. We pulled ourselves out of barbarism as a race, we've pulled ourselves out of just horrid conditions. We've at a huge cost, we've created civilization over thousands of years. We've got to recognize that it took us 1,000 years to build it. It won't fall overnight, but we've got to be stewards. We've got to be individuals who recognize the need to save the collective civilization, right? As individuals, as not part of some bigger collective movement. So it does matter. And going back to what I said before, why is the concept of God so important? Because as you said, it gives us a framework, it gives us boundaries, it gives us hope, it gives us a model. And that model, certainly in Western religion, has been the model of the individual. The American government was founded on individual liberties. These are the things that have made us rich and prosperous. We have to start doing a better job teaching our kids those things and quit apologizing for them and quit letting the public school teachers and the universities apologize and lie for what has made us civilized in the way that we have become. If we can do that, we can pull it back. But right now, the hand, the mechanism of all the schooling does, is not in the hands of us. It's in the hands of social utopian dreamers. And so as long as they have unfettered access to our kids and we can't be bothered to try to fight that back, then we're going to inevitably lose.
It's going to take some kind of depth of consciousness and awareness, too. And I think what brings that to mind is that what you're arguing for is specifically giving up your life for the greater good. And that's exactly what the bad guys are saying you have to do. So the difference between the two is not that, because they're both saying that. It's what they mean. One of them says giving up your life for the greater good means following a tyrant. What you're saying, it means following an inner purpose, no matter what's going on the outside, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. Looking inside for the truth, as opposed to conforming to some abstract truth of the collective, is what keeps you human. It allows you to keep your identity. And it's the story, isn't it, of every dissident who stood up to the regime, every Solzhenitsyn, every Mother Teresa, every warrior who fought against the kind of totality, every Schindler, right, who fought against the collective groupthink that became so devastating and so destructive.
Yeah, and they were actually doing it for the collective.
That's right.
Just not from the same point of view.
Well, and what they all had in common, they were doing it out of religious motivation, right? Out of the divine, out of an emphasis of the idea that sacrificing self for others is a greater thing than sacrificing somebody weaker than you for your own advancement.
Yeah, yeah. And you have some potential inside you that's not just a piece of meat to be eaten as a sheep.
Or fangs to eat sheep.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the highest thing to aspire to.
Right. No, that's just, in fact, that's the lowest thing. That's the jungle, right?
Yeah, and eventually all the wolves die in that philosophy anyway.
And they all do, and because there aren't enough sheep. There are too many wolves and not enough sheep. And that's exactly what happens, right?
They have to eat each other then, I guess.
Exactly. They become cannibalistic. Uh-huh. Once you've eaten all the sheep, you've got no one left to eat, so you see what happens then.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. So, and what would be really nice, I think, is since there's a very tiny group, from what I've seen, at the very top of this whole structure that's behind the scenes and not ever talked about or known who they are, the hearts of those people need to be changed in order to change the whole wave of the system on Earth. And I think that could be done by anybody, you know, if you become totally a vessel for what's supposed to flow through you, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And so, you know, I it's amazing how sophisticated we are in terms of technology. We can go to the moon, we can fly across continents. But, you know, at the core, these are all just simple battles between good and evil, aren't they? There's good and there's evil. It's amazing how postmodern culture has tried to pretend that those words don't mean anything. But when you scratch the surface of all of these events, you see that which is evil, that which is selfish, that which is exploitative. And you see that which is good, that which is self-sacrificial, that which is other-directed. And however you try to mask this through all of this cultural dialectic, the fact is that those things are still the poles at which we have to make our choices. We have to choose one or the other.
Yeah, and it's really paradoxical, because giving up everything for the sake of your inner direction is actually to let some huge power flow through you that could make things a lot better.
I agree.
Thanks for letting me hold you over. I appreciate it. I hope we haven't taken too much of your schedule.
No, thank you guys very much. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon down the road.
I hope so. Have a good rest of the day. Okay. See ya. Okay, so there goes Dr. Duke Pesta from Freedom Project Academy and author of the books that we talked about, the websites, fpeusa.org. freedomprojectacademy.com, and that's an alternative to the conventional, I think it's K-12 education that kids are getting in America right now, which have a few issues, as you've known about, and really inspiring guy to get to talk to. And what I had hoped to do, and I hope that we accomplished to some degree in a short, really short discussion with the available time that he had for us, is the idea that, some pretty serious things are going on in the world right now, and People are being educated to self-destruct and to be completely insane and think that they're fighting for good and destroying bad things, and they're actually demonstrating and being examples of the worst kind of behavior and total lack of ethics and morality that you can imagine. And many of them think that it's right, and they're just they're not thinking about it. They're taking it like Dr. Pesta and I were commenting, that it's a new religion of the opposite of anything moral, and getting rid of what was known in the past to be true, that what's true doesn't matter anymore. It's how much you can dominate and destroy other people and do it in the name of saving the earth. And they've actually accomplished it to the point of millions of people thinking that that's how you save the earth, is to destroy humanity, get rid of individual freedoms. As he pointed out, certainly get rid of America, because even though it wasn't perfect in implementing them, it was founded on certain ideals that were all based around the government being only there to protect the rights of the individual from foreign invasion and internal insurrection, they called it, which is happening all over the place now. I don't think they foresaw that all the positions of power in that structure that was supposed to protect freedom would be taken over by people who were the wolves that Dr. Pesta was talking about. That's the situation that we're trying to deal with now, and I think that's why they're trying to keep us unconscious of who we are at all costs. And like he talked about, you know, the importance of knowing that there's a higher power that you could call God or whatever your belief wants to call it. If there's no if there's no higher power and nothing really true, then all that's left is whoever gets the most power. And you can see that happening in the struggle of the people within the power structure against each other to see who can do the most damage to raise themselves up. And in the end, as he ended up saying, Dr. Pesta, all the wolves have nobody else to eat except each other, and it doesn't work out very well for them, which is really the plan of the people at the higher levels that don't even tell their chief wolves that they're all going to be sacrificed in the end. But that's the plan. So the people within the power structure that are all wrapped up in that, there have been some that realized, wait a minute, this might not be a really good idea to keep doing this and go toward total destruction, because we were told as aspiring rulers that we're going to be in the privileged class, we'll have all these slaves or at least robots to rule over, and that we'll get to enjoy the planet as our playground. But wait a minute, if we're destroying the planet, in other words, the real environmental issues, wiping out the life support system of life on Earth, that might not be a really good way to do it, you know, because we depend on those things and we're not going to survive it. And they start realizing that the plan that their ultimate rulers are putting into place is not just a reduction of the number of people here to save the Earth. It's a sacrifice of all life on the planet. It's what evil would naturally do. It wants pain and destruction and suffering for its own sake, thinking that it's going to merge into something higher in cyberspace in the future. It sounds totally ridiculous, I know, but that's clearly, you know, by logic, the only thing that could be happening right now, which is not going to have the result that the rulers think it will, but it's making a big mess for us in the meantime and for them. They don't even realize it. That they're suffering from the same programming that we are, not realizing who they actually are and who we are, and the same ultimate power that could be flowing through all of us for harmony and based on love and making things okay, capable of healing even now what's going on. And I still think it's not necessarily too late to do that. And a nice thing that Dr. Pesta pointed out is you don't have to get a million other people to agree to do this with you. It comes down to what you do, looking at your own life, changing the things that need to be changed in it, getting back in harmony with real laws of nature, with the source of where you came from, and living according to that, rather than just memorizing your programming and doing things that don't make any sense at all and hurt you and everybody else in the process. Because once you understand how the laws of nature work, it's not possible to intentionally hurt anybody else without hurting yourself at the same time. And I think that's what even the really brilliant rulers in power positions now have not been smart enough to realize so far. You can't destroy a planet, destroy a civilization, enslave people, and destroy species on the earth right and left without destroying yourself at the same time. They think they're above that law, but they're actually not. And if you're listening to us and you're in one of those positions, even at the lower levels, you might want to rethink that or think about it for the first time, because what you do to anybody is what you do to yourself, and what you do for anybody is what you do for yourself too. So if you want to really help yourself the most you could possibly do that, you give your whole life to help everybody else. And it's like in the scripture that Dr. Pesta was talking about was the quote, whatever someone does to anybody else, even the smallest other person or being, they're actually doing to me, because there's one being behind all of this play. And once you realize that, it changes everything that you do and how you feel, and you don't want to hurt anybody anymore, even if you're in a power position. There are things you can do from within that position that will make a difference for everybody for the better. So something to think about. And this is shorter than some of our shows, but I think he put a lot of really important content into it that I wanted to be relevant to the issues that everybody faces when they wake up every day. How to use that day, and how to do it in a way that without even saying a word to anybody else or writing down a word or trying to convince anybody of anything, you're going to affect other people by who you are and the fact that you're trying to be true to that. So I thought it was great that he shared that with us. Just in case you can't find us at some time in the near future on any of these platforms, in case we say too much that you're not supposed to say, remember to go to lostartsradio.com, our main website. Get on the mailing list there so we don't lose touch with you completely. Might be able to send you embedded videos or something, even if you can't find us on the major platforms. And also our channel on brighteon.com, which is spelled B-R-I-G-H-T-E-O-N, like bright eon, bright age. And our channel is brighteon.com/channel/lostartsradio. Also, if you want a supportive environment to work on some of these things as far as life transformation goes, physically, mentally, spiritually, all these levels together, we're already working on that with people who care about these things in a private platform excuse me, called planetaryhealingclub.com. We meet there live every week, ongoing. Doesn't matter what your nationality or race or religion or sex or social status is or anything. Everybody's equal there, because we're all spirit inside bodies trying to make use of this brief time in the world as well as we can. And there are small dues that go to our nonprofit if you join that with us. And then we can talk about information that probably wouldn't be able to share publicly and still stay on the air. Things that I've been working on in the research that I've done over the last 54 years or so, and is still ongoing. I'd like to be able to share that with you. If you get in the club, we can talk about it directly, any aspect that you want. No medical advice or anything forbidden like that. I'm not a medical doctor, but it's still at the moment legal to share ancient information updated to how you can use it in the present world to totally transform your life experience. And if you're having any interest in that, you're invited to join us personally every week, and I'll see you there in person. If occasionally we get time to share some of this stuff on an individual basis, all based on life transformation, health issues, no medical advice again, but health and life issues that you want a boost on, there's some really powerful information we can share. Private sessions are occasionally available. Just write to me on email if you're interested in that, richard@lostartsradio.com. Can't do a lot of those, but we can fit everybody in the club and just do the best we can. The other thing is our Sunday shows will continue like this one to have the most inspirational people and organizations we can find, people that have an impact on education. And even though maybe we've gotten no good education up to now in the public system, where the education we've got has been the opposite of education, we can start on doing that ourselves and then work with what we learn, put it into what we do every day, and give the planet the best chance we can to have life on this place survive. And I think that would be good, turn things around. And like Dr. Pesta was talking about, if we begin to have some understanding of what's actually happening, it does give us a responsibility, if we want to accept it, to try to become what we believe in. You know, like Gandhi said, become that change that you really like to see in the world, rather than trying to convince other people to do it. Become it just by being around you. People will start to wonder about the same things that are motivating you, and the change will spread. So anyway, sorry for talking so long. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll try to get you a video or two during the week, and I hope that you have a great week, and we'll see you at the next show. Talk to you soon.
Introducing Lost Arts Radio on Subscribestar.com. Just go to Subscribestar.com/Lost Arts Radio to find our rewards program, offering 10 different giving levels starting at just $5 a month. We offer incredible value for any rewards level, from extra monthly interview videos not available publicly to subscription-based Planetary Healing Club videos once, twice, or three times a month, to private counseling sessions with Lost Arts Radio host Richard Sachs, to tech help with me, Doug Diamond. We even have one option where you can be the star on Lost Arts Radio as our guest on a specially produced show just for you. We conduct an interview with you and broadcast it to our growing network and listenership. Our subscribe star levels are one of a kind and offer great rewards for any budget. Please help support Lost Arts Radio. We can't do it without you. With increasing censorship on many of our channels, we really need your support today to keep doing what we're doing. As Richard says, we're not even at survival level yet. Lost Arts Radio has three weekly shows. Lost Arts Radio Live each Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, which is a live stream currently on multiple platforms in case we get banned from some of the larger ones. Right now, we're on two YouTube channels, Facebook Live, Periscope, which is Twitter, Twitch, and DLive. You can access these broadcasts by going to www.lostartsradio.com/live for all the links to those channels. The Planetary Healing Club meets right after Lost Arts Radio Live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights. And our Sunday show with guests airs at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Sunday nights on our Blog Talk Radio channel, our YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and on Brighteon. Be sure to sign up for our free email list just in case we do get banned on big tech's platforms. It's just a matter of time, really. They don't like the stuff we talk about, and they do not want the truth out there. In fact, they have already attacked us numerous times. Join our free email list so we can let you know where we are and how to access our shows. The sign-up button is right on the top right on most pages of our website. The best starting point for all things Lost Arts Radio is our main site, lostartsradio.com, where you can find the hottest news selection videos that we curate just for you. Those are on the homepage and added to daily, as well as articles and breaking news about information you really need to know. Our show archives, the 10 most recent shows, are right on our homepage, as well as our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/lostartsradio. Or just click the All Things Radio Show tab right on our website. We're in the podcast directory on iTunes, and all of our shows except the banned ones are on our YouTube channels at Lost Arts Radio and at Diamond Disc. Our Brighteon page is really taking off, and we often have editors' picks videos right on their homepage. Visit brighteon.com/channel/Lost Arts Radio. On our site, you can also access our free listener forum, as well as sign up for the Planetary Healing Club, which is just $25 a month, where you get private access to a one-on-one interaction with host Richard Sachs and myself and the other club members who participate live. More info can be found at planetaryhealingclub.com. We're providing solutions in there to make the world a better place. Come join us. Stay tuned, because up next, you'll get to hear a really great song by an independent artist that we're doing our best to support. Go to lostartsradio.com/music for the full list of all the great songs and bands that we spin on our audio-only podcast shows. If you're in a band and want to submit a song for consideration for airplay on Lost Arts Radio, visit my website at diamonddiscaudio.com for more information about the music placement, mastering, and mixing work that I do. Thanks again for listening to and supporting Lost Arts Radio. We love having you as part of our family to learn, experience, and grow with.
I'm never.